I found that the experience of solving problems in lots of different environments within software, within technology, but also outside of technology, just gives you a very solid base that enables you to spot patterns and start to detect problems and avoid mistakes quite easily.
I'm Sean Cheatham, Chief Sales Officer at Hayes Technology, and this is our podcast called How Did You Get That Job? That explores the secrets behind career success in the tech industry. In this episode, we meet Thomas Wythe, who is the SVP for Solutions at education tech startup GoOne. We'll talk to Thomas about his career to date, his move to Australia, and his love for working and helping to build companies from the ground up. So Thomas, let's start the conversation by giving us an overview of your career to date.
I actually left school at 16. I was quite keen to sort of get out into the world and figure out what I wanted to do, what I wanted to be. And I took an apprenticeship with an aerospace company. And that's where I learned mechanical engineering. Electrical engineering was definitely something I felt very passionate about. After a while, I kind of realized this is following blueprints, following designs, following detailed instructions. If you found a problem or something that was inefficient and there was a better way to do things, there wasn't a lot of latitude to actually get that stuff on the design radar. Felt that it was following instructions to sort of get things done. And, you know, longer term, that's probably not so interesting. The money was very good, which was why I sort of persevered for as long as I did. By that point in time, a lot of friends that I had at school that had gone through university were starting to get jobs in IT, particularly in sort of enterprise computing, what was Hewlett-Packard and sort of Olivetti and Compaq back in the day. These roles that they were getting were fascinating to me, just such large scale computing. And so I decided, you know, IT was what I wanted to do. And that was a big pivot. So getting out of electrical engineering into technology for the first time took some serious work. Eventually, I took my first real role in IT, which was in a large scale accounting company. And that was game changing for me. This was perfect. I loved it. It was troubleshooting, wide area networks, server infrastructure. And these were things which were pivotal to that business. This was how the business was run. You can't be an accountant without the tools to do it. And then from there, I sort of took this passion for sort of networking, security, server infrastructure. Those are the things that were really interesting me, and got into managed hosting just as the IT bubble burst, unfortunately. So I sort of transitioned into a large scale server infrastructure, data centers, networking, security again, but on a huge scale. And it was absolutely incredible. But because the bubble had burst, money was pretty scarce. And we sort of realized that actually the best way to sort of optimize our costs was to try and almost commoditize server infrastructure to make it really easy for people to host applications, to host websites. I think a lot of people have a sort of, I invented Amazon AWS before Amazon did kind of story. Kind of felt like we did at the time. We built a way in which customers could sort of come online, choose the server infrastructure they wanted, hit a button, enter a credit card, and basically get up and running. It was pretty cool. And that sort of led me to Betfair and join them as a security networking analyst. There were so many problems to solve. The scale was enormous. You know, this was a company that was growing faster than any business I'd ever sort of been a part of before. Bootstrapping wasn't something we had to do, but we had an enormous number of problems to solve. I was promoted a few times. Last role I had at Betfair was an international IT director. So I took care of server infrastructure, software engineering, product development, a bunch of different things. I met a bunch of people who had some pretty interesting ideas. And obviously, they were cashed up at the time and kind of thinking, you know, what do we do next? So I joined two or three of them with some different ideas. In fact, one entrepreneur I was working with had a video marketplace connecting video producers. And that's where I started to learn about sort of marketplace dynamics. So how do you create massive scale on two sides of a marketplace, both on acquisition of your liquidity, of your content, and then on distribution? You know, how do you get this stuff out to the most number of publishers possible? And that's when my role started to become sort of less about technology and more about kind of solving that particular problem of scalability. And it wasn't just tech. It was also relationships. You know, how do you build relationships with great content producers? How do you build relationships with the right publishers? And then how do you scale that to beyond one-to-one relationship to having a partner program or some way in which people can onboard and consume your content, you know, self-service? And I found that whole dynamic really fascinating. I'd met my wife previously. We decided it was a good time for a complete sort of change of scene. So moved to Australia, straight back out into the sort of startup circuit. picked up Tamando, which was Brisbane-based. And this was, again, a different type of marketplace, but a marketplace nonetheless. So logistics providers and retailers. So retailers need to ship products. Logistics providers want retailers. That was our flywheel. That was our model. And so from there, once we'd sold and so we went through a bit of an exit plan, I actually met Andrew Barnes, who's the CEO of Go One. They were doing direct sales with businesses of all sizes that needed learning content, needed to be compliant, needed CPD, needed professional development content for their users and for their staff. And it was just incredibly predictable. These guys had built this very scalable model. And that really sort of takes us to the present day. You know, the rest is, they say, it's history. We've now reached that sort of fabled unicorn status, which is awesome, after a couple hundred million USD investment. And now, you know, the rest of the journey is doubling down again and then again. But you can sort of see that path in front of us. It's very exciting.
Interestingly, in the last episode, we met with Ali DiPolito, who spoke in depth about the cultural differences she experienced moving from Argentina to the UK. I'm just wondering, you know, what cultural differences did you encounter moving from the UK to Australia?
That's an interesting one, actually. Probably the biggest thing is in the UK, people tend to be maybe not so direct. So everything tends to be very slightly sort of, not sugarcoated is probably the wrong term, but everybody's very polite. So when somebody says, oh, I wonder if you could awfully just maybe do that slightly differently, what they mean is, you know, you're doing it wrong and you really need to change your approach. I found coming to Australia really refreshing because from that point of view, everybody's very direct. This is not working. We need to do this differently. And I find that that just led to decisions being made a little bit quicker, knowing where you stood with people as well, which in turn, you know, you could use to your benefit because you're like, yep, that's how I need to approach this problem or with this person. So yeah, I actually think it's been a positive move, but at the same time, I do love a cup of tea and a very late sunset, which you don't get in Australia.
So obviously you started in tech a little non-traditionally, right?
Yeah, yeah.
How do you think that's benefited your career and your success?
First and foremost, in problem solving and just situational awareness, you know, there's an enormous amount of synergy between being a mechanical or electrical engineer and being a software engineer. Types of problems are obviously different, but the way you solve them is actually, funnily enough, very similar. I found that the experience of solving problems in lots of different environments within software, within technology, but also outside of technology, just gives you a very solid base that enables you to spot patterns and start to detect problems and avoid mistakes quite easily. The balance that you have to strike is not becoming sort of jaded or making too many assumptions. I've seen this before. This never works out. Every situation is going to be a little bit different. So I think the most useful thing I've picked up along my journey is solving problems, having that diversity of toolkit to do that, but also continuously reminding myself to just step back, look at the reality and see how this situation could be different. It's been an interesting journey in that respect.
Certainly with tech and the solution industry, you know, really changing almost every day. I mean, how do you stay up to date on technology trends?
I've always tried to look at this very simplistically. So yes, I like to read and it's very easy to consume any kind of information these days. There are places I go and there are things I read very frequently. I like to try and stay in touch with sort of infrastructure, sort of software trends, and there are communities and forums I'm sort of checking into and reading all the time. But I also love to just floor walk. And, you know, as long as you're not distracting people or pushing sort of context switch when they're in the middle of something, just really good just to listen to how people are going about sort of solving certain problems. And also just talking through that problem with them. You can often find you just tweak someone's thinking by 1 or 2%. You do that 100 times a day and, you know, you can start to see how you can help your business stay aligned and stay on goal. And I just kind of love listening to people's experiences. And I think some of the hairiest problems we've had to solve have been when we have collectively tried to solve it together and had the right perspectives in the room to do it.
Tell me about maybe some of the biggest challenges you've encountered in your career.
High velocity growth is definitely a big one. So any business that's growing quickly, making sure that you're continuously aware of the problems that you really need to solve to be able to scale or move to that next level. My CTO has a really great phrase, which is right people, right place, right time. And I think that summarizes it absolutely perfectly. So making sure that you've got the right skill set, solving the right problem when you need to solve that problem, not too early, not too late. That is the constant balance of high velocity growth. You solve too many future problems too early, you're probably not making money. You don't solve enough of them early enough, then you might not be making money in the future. Just a very fine balance.
So let's focus on your position at GoOne. What does the SVP of Solutions do?
I spend most of my time with partners, so both on the sort of supply and demand side of our marketplace. And my role and my team's role is really to build product and technical rapport with those partners. So we have a commercial team that will sort of get that partner to a point where they're sort of ready to engage. And then we'll step in and try and figure out like what of all of the things that GoOne offers, all of our technology, our interfaces, our tools, what is the combination of those things that is going to deliver value for that partner? And so to really bridge the gap between the commercial proposition, the product, and how we're going to take the product to market, any engineering work that has to take place behind the scenes, is really bringing all of those things together, but also doing it at scale. So obviously having a one-to-one relationship with distribution partners, or LMS providers, isn't something that we're going to be able to do forever. So we need to build that very repeatable sort of toolkit partner program, both technical, product, commercial, that enables sort of partners to do stuff themselves. And that's primarily what my role is. It's identifying what those commonalities are, helping our product teams build those patterns, and then getting those partners on board at high velocity so that we can expand our marketplace and sort of turn that flywheel of content acquisition, which helps us kind of acquire customers and businesses, which in turn gives us learners, staff members who consume content that makes us more attractive to content providers. That is a never-ending flywheel that obviously the more liquidity you can create on both sides of your marketplace, the faster it spins. And obviously the more money we make, the more value we deliver.
So now that our listeners know what you do, how about explaining to them, you know, what does a typical day look like?
Lots of discovery calls. So I'll meet a lot of partners at varying sort of stages of commercial readiness and starting to identify those common patterns and how we can help them to release more value from their customer base, give their customers more value. So these discovery calls are sort of, they're an hour, a couple of hours, and we sort of look at the UX. We decide what the customer journey is going to look like. We talk a bit about the commercial offer, sort of lock in what the GoOne solution looks like and sort of decide next steps. And then we've got all the planning and design that will sit behind that. So I work with my team and across the business to figure out what a go-to-market is going to look like for that partner. And then sort of more broadly across the business, like objective setting, roadmap planning, getting involved with product and engineering teams to help bring the voice of these partners, of these customers to the table and influence some of the product thinking that's going into our planning and our roadmap and strategy.
From start to finish with GoOne, I mean, maybe help us understand how your role has evolved.
Yeah, evolved is the right word. So coming on board in those early stages, I think I was probably employee 20 or 30 at the time. I can't quite remember, but everybody had to do a bit of everything. So very quickly, I was getting involved in customer support, sort of helping build an engineering team. So the recruitment side of things, lightweight bit of product process, sort of try and get us started with that rigor of a little bit of prioritization in deciding what we're going to build and when we're going to build it. And then, of course, over time, talking again about sort of right people, right place, right time, it becomes necessary to, as the business grows and grows very quickly, what is my superpower? Like, where do I need to focus to help this business achieve the best possible outcome? And so over time, my role has become more focused on building relationships and building solutions for sort of partners on both sides of the marketplace. That's really how things have evolved. You tend to work very broadly. You solve 100 different problems a day. Some of them you solve permanently, some of them recur. And then over time, you hire specialists and experts and you grow your team and you put in place the rigor around objective setting and planning and OKRs. And then you focus on the sort of area that most excites you and that you can contribute the most value. And that's kind of what I've ended up doing.
As you've worked in so many different startups in your career journey, have you noticed any similarities between the companies?
All businesses go through the same, especially in technology startups, they go through the same phases of evolution. That first phase where you're sort of bootstrapping, you're taking your seed money, which might only be, you know, $50,000 or $100,000 even, and you're trying to optimize that as much as you possibly can. And you are squeezing every ounce of value from yourself, from your team, and from that cash to be successful. And the way that you are successful is very different to the way you're going to be successful in 10 years' time. And all businesses always go through those same phases, the sort of bootstrapping, you know, followed by the, oh, hang on a second, we've been quite successful here. We've got customers. Those customers have specific needs. We don't quite know where we're going to be yet. So we should listen to those needs and try and solve every single one, which we try and do. And then that next phase, which is like, oh my God, now we've got more customers than we can possibly do that with. And now we need to start focusing on who we really are. What is our product vision? What is our product roadmap? And starting to say to customers, yes, but, or actually, we've got an SI network that can do that thing for you. And you're going to take our value and you're going to take their value and put it together. And then that final phase, which is just absolute hyperscaling, where all of a sudden you start to realize that actually some customers that you have, you maybe won't have in the future. You know, they just don't fit your model or your business plan anymore. And it doesn't matter what business you get into, if it is successful, always goes through those same phases. And because you're going on that journey, often with, you know, very strong-willed, very capable entrepreneurs, it's also very hard to say, I've seen this before, this is going to be the next phase that we're going to have to go through. So the way you narrate that, you have to sort of adapt for your environment as well and help people realize and spot those signals as they start to happen. Now is the time to pivot. Now is the time to sort of not do professional services. Now is the time to focus on hyperscaling. That's probably the common thread through, you know, every successful business I've worked in and unsuccessful business. They just haven't made the next pivot.
So when you're making decisions around technology for Go One, I mean, how do you know you're making the correct ones?
From experience, it really comes down to probably first and foremost, especially when you're growing quickly, not over planning, taking the time to understand the problem area, get the right people in the room to interrogate that problem and devise a solution. The temptation sometimes is to overplan, especially if the problem is a big one or it carries a lot of risk. The more risk you have, the more you want to iterate your plan several times before you take action. And within that process, just make sure you're collecting all the right data at the right time, because it's the data you collect from doing that that's going to make the next decision you make even more informed. Betfair was over 1,700 staff just before we IPO'd. You'd be amazed how big the business can be, but you can still make really rapid, really quick decisions if you get the right people in the room at the time. So having that real balance and diversity and range of people and skills that can interrogate an idea with the right sort of engineering, compliance, legal, marketing, sales people, you will very quickly arrive probably the right decision. And then the next step is just a little bit of planning, set the metrics, gather the data. Was that successful? I think that's probably the biggest thing that that contributes to good decision making.
Yeah, it makes sense. You obviously have a diverse industry background. Are there any technology challenges that are unique to Go One?
Timing is probably the most interesting one. So with COVID, but even before that, the way in which people learn was very much changing. So historically, learning was very much a one-way mechanism. It's like, here's knowledge you need, delivered in probably not the most efficient fashion, probably not the most engaging fashion either. And we've been in the middle of aggregating and creating a marketplace from that content while the content itself has been changing. The way it's being delivered, micro-learning, micro-credentials, having more parties involved in our marketplace as well. So even universities starting to look at online content offerings and starting to consider sort of attesting to different content types or different content from different providers so that they can assemble it together into their own micro credential. So almost leveraging our marketplace to do that, you know, that is an emerging trend as well. And so we've had to sort of build the marketplace, build the liquidity while the content itself, the thing we're consuming, is continuously changing. And there are some standards in the learning industry that enable you to consume content, but more and more they're becoming not obsolete, but very varied. And so we've had to sort of stay ahead of that at the same time, whilst we're also scaling a business which is acquiring customers at a phenomenal rate. So you've got all the sort of standard sort of scaling challenges that come with that: performance, capacity, resilience, scalability, growing out your sales team in the right way, growing out your outbound team in the right way, whilst you're also solving problems that are changing all the time. So a combination of those things has been probably the biggest and most unique challenge to Go One, but it's one we've always been able to stay ahead of, which is phenomenal.
So Thomas, let's look to the future. How do you think your role as SVP of Solutions will evolve at Go One?
First and foremost, probably starting to spend less time, but with more partners. So finding more efficient, more effective ways of sort of scaling up how we're engaging and building these relationships. So it's all going to be about tooling. It's going to be working with product teams to build faster, better, cheaper, more APIs, starting to build partner programs that enable people to log in, go get their API keys, understand the patterns that they have to work with, and get up and running a lot faster. So it's all going to be about sort of hyperscale and how we can build out sort of both sides of the marketplace. And those are obviously the things that sort of excite me the most as well. So I think it's a perfect combination, but that's very much where I would see kind of this role going in the future. And I think the same would be true for any sort of growth business. Initially, you're always going to be quite hands-on, but then you're going to be continuously thinking about how can I scale this role and make this as efficient as possible.
And what advice would you give to someone listening right now who's aspiring to move into technology leadership? And, you know, what do you think it takes to be successful?
I'd probably boil it down to three things. So first of all, learning. So yep, obviously, you know, reading and starting to watch, observe, and kind of see how good leadership is done. There's an amazing number of good books out there, but the solution is, you know, the solution is not to read a book. It's probably to start a bit of trial and error and actually do some of this for yourself. You know, express an interest in leadership, even if it's, you know, as I've often found in sort of my career as well, sometimes some leadership positions, especially in enterprise bits of technology, some leadership and management positions actually pay less. They're actually a step back to start with. But the future for you looks a little bit different, and it's worth the sort of short-term sacrifice. But get out there, put yourself into a position where you can manage, whether it's people or process or technology. But in particular, you know, regardless of what you end up doing, it's definitely a focus on people. You know, a single engineer can build a web application, a working application, and deploy it. A team of engineers and product people and designers can actually take something to market, and that thing will more likely be successful. So my sort of biggest advice in leadership is don't do everything yourself. Build a team around you and motivate that team, get that team excited, and learn about those tricks and traits that enable that by experimenting and putting yourself into a position where you can do that as soon as possible. And also bridging the gap in terms of understanding how a business works. Again, being good in management and particular in leadership is not about being the best engineer. It's not about being the best solutioning person or solution designer. It's actually about understanding customer needs, how marketing works, how sales, how outbound works, the commercial process. Try and understand and experiment and get knowledge across the business as well. Again, even if you have to take a bit of a step back for a while, or you know, you work in a more junior role in a different function or a different part of the business, just to become sort of familiar with that area. I think if you can bridge the gap and you can focus on people and continually learn, you're going to be a far better position to take a leadership role.
That's been a theme on this series for sure. I've heard that before, so good stuff. What do you think the wider tech industry can learn from what you and your team are doing from a tech standpoint?
Yeah, that is an interesting question. I think definitely checking your reality. So at all times, being very, very aware of what is going on around you. I've seen so many businesses that will approach a problem. The problem changes over time, but their way in which they're solving does not. And those businesses generally don't tend to last very long. You must continuously sort of take your head up every so often and just kind of look around you and see, you know, what are your competitors doing? What is your industry doing? What's the world doing? What are your staff doing? How are they feeling? We've continuously pushed ourselves to be better, to continuously engage with our partners and customers, to look around us, to not be complacent with our current success, because ultimately, if you don't reach out for the stars, then inevitably you'll never get to the moon. And that's, I think, has been, you know, a constant thread for Go One. And just making sure you're solving a real problem as well. Again, so many businesses are solving problems that don't really exist. And so therefore, you know, the exponential growth that you would get if you were solving sort of a real world problem, you're probably not going to experience. And then finally, just not accepting mediocrity and making hard calls when you need to. So whether it's technology, process, anything that's not working is not acceptable. And if you walk past that stuff, you know, you accept it. And I think sometimes, especially in the technology industry, you do need to look up from time to time and acknowledge that some things aren't working well in your business and deal with it swiftly.
And what would you say to people who have a non-traditional background about a career in technology?
It really is about what excites people. So technology is really commoditized. Like when I got into IT back in the day, even just before, the only thing you could really do with the internet was basically book airline tickets. And maybe there were a few online forums. I found it fascinating how quickly things changed and how quickly things became very, very commoditized. You know, your mobile phone has 20,000 times the processing power of computers that we were using even 10 years ago. technology is part of everybody's life now. We're all sort of technologists and futurists in a way. But really, if that excites you and you want to understand how those things work, that's really a cue for me that you should be interested in a career in technology. If you want to understand how that world around you is working, and that really excites you and you're very curious about that, and you want to sort of pull it apart and figure out how it works, then the technology industry is a way to do that. It's the layer below. It's the thing that powers all of these devices and experiences that people are having with technology. And so if you can help people realize that that world exists and that excites them, you know, they're ready for a career in technology. And again, that's something I think everybody can have a hand in as early on as possible, whether it's through the STEM curriculum at school or whatever.
Yeah, and thanks for reminding me how old I am, because I can remember that part of the internet. So finally, what are your long-term personal goals for your career and with technology?
I very much want to continue solving problems, but also continually finding new types of problems, new environments, new kind of ways in which technology is being applied. I never want to stop doing that. So I think, you know, the next few years for me will probably be looking at different set of problems and, you know, eventually looking at sort of how other businesses, what kind of problems they're experiencing, and getting into different markets as well. So I'd like to just take my toolkit that I've grown over the years and apply it elsewhere and continue to sort of fill it with the right tools to solve all sorts of different problems, and hopefully, you know, use that to help businesses sort of navigate this really interesting sort of new world that we're in. And, you know, even now, I think, you know, the world that we find ourselves in is probably going to be very different, you know, from this point in time. And I'm hoping that some of the experiences I'm gaining now will help businesses in the future through similar challenges.
That was Thomas Wythe, SVP of Solutions at GoOne. I think listening to Thomas is fascinating, as in the podcast series, we've met a lot of individuals, but all from big tech. And Thomas has given us an insight of tech from a startup perspective. Throughout the episode, you can feel the energy Thomas has to drive success and his willingness to do what he can, even if it means sidestepping into another role to help meet the overall goals of the organization. I really liked how he kept talking about being conversational with people and the philosophy of right people, right place, right time, and how everything needs to align to meet success. Thank you for listening, and join us next time where we'll be speaking to another inspirational person from technology. I'm your host, Sean Cheatham, Chief Sales Officer at Hayes Technology, and you've been listening to How Did You Get That Job? To find out more about Hayes Technology, visit our website at HayesTechnology.com and hit follow at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.